When we admire great leaders, we often point to a list of accomplishments that define their legacy. But in doing so, we sometimes miss the personal virtues that fueled their achievements. Today, on Insight for Living, in his continuing biography of Paul, Chuck Swindoll identifies several character traits that made the apostle an outstanding leader. In addition, Chuck helps us understand how to embrace these virtues and develop these disciplines as our own. Chuck says it all starts by adjusting our attitude. He titled today's message, Responding as Paul Responded.
Let's turn to 2 Corinthians. I want to read for you from three sections, first in chapter 1. Be sure you have the second letter to the Corinthians, not the first. Chapter 1, and then from a very small section of chapter 4, and then a few verses from chapter 12 as we're thinking about responding the way Paul responded in our continued study of the life and times of Paul. 2 Corinthians 1, drop down to verse 8. For we do not want you to be unaware, brethren, of our affliction which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened excessively beyond our strength, so that we despaired even of life. Indeed, we had the sentence of death within ourselves, so that we would not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. And slip ahead to chapter 4, and I want to read verses 8 and 9, and then over across the page, verse 16 through 18. 2 Corinthians 4, 8, we are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not despairing, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed. Verse 16, therefore we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. And once again, if you will, chapter 12, following a litany of experiences he had gone through, really he had endured, Paul writes, verse 7 of chapter 12, because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, for this reason, to keep me from exalting myself, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from exalting myself. Concerning this, I implored the Lord three times that it might leave me. And he has said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, distresses, persecutions, difficulties, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I'm strong.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To dig deeper into the life of the Apostle Paul on your own, be sure to purchase our Searching the Scriptures Bible Study Workbook by going to insight.org/workbooks. Chuck titled today's message, Responding as Paul Responded.
What is it that makes us admire another individual? What would be one of those, if not the most important, one of the most important characteristics that make for greatness in another's life? I don't think it's the individual's actions as much as it is her or his reactions to what has happened to him or to her. Cynthia and I are friends with a couple named Charlie and Lucy Wiedemeyer. Maybe you've met the Wiedemeyers. If you have, you'll never forget them. Charlie was an outstanding, in fact, an all-star football player from the state of Hawaii, and could very well have played excellent professional football, in my opinion, but he got Lou Gehrig's disease, with the result that Charlie today is only able to move his eyelids. And Lucy is there alongside him, loving him and interpreting the flutter of his eyelids. Remarkable people. We don't admire the Wiedemeyers because Charlie has Lou Gehrig's disease. Our hearts go out to him for that, but we admire them because of how he and she have responded to the disease that has so taken movement and life from him. All of us know the name Johnny Erickson Tada. We remember when she was a young girl, loved to ride horses and dance and enjoy life with her other high school chums until that fateful dive into the Chesapeake Bay, and she struck the bottom unexpectedly as it came so soon, and the result has been a paralysis that has caused Johnny to live in the chair now for the rest of her life. She's married. Ken married Johnny, and their lives are intertwined with one another as she's involved in the ministry of Johnny and friends. And we all sit with mouth open, listening to her speak and tell her story. But it isn't the paralysis that makes us admire Johnny and Ken. It's her response to the paralysis. That's what makes for greatness. Chances are good that none of you know Lisa Beamer. Lisa lives in Cranberry, New Jersey. She's carrying her and Todd's third child. Lisa became a widow the morning of September the 11th, 2001. Her husband, Todd, was among three others who joined together in a strong-willed, heroic fight against the terrorists on Flight 93 of 32,000 feet. And from what we're able to decipher from the cell phone calls, those men kept it from plunging into another important national building in Washington. And as all of us know, it crashed instead into a wooded section of southwest Pennsylvania, killing everyone on the plane but no one on the ground. A movement is underway, I read, where the officials in Washington are considering giving those four men, plus homeless, obviously, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest award a civilian can receive. Wouldn't that be great? When Lisa Beamer, Todd's wife, heard of her husband's heroics, her response was, "It made my life worth living again." We admire Lisa Beamer not because she lost her husband, our hearts go out to her for that, but we admire her because of the way she responds to the loss of her husband. It is response to life's situations that makes for greatness, not the situations themselves. It is not action but reaction that leads us to greatness. I've said for years that life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we respond to it. 10% of Charlie Wiedemeyer's life is Lou Gehrig's disease. 90% is how they're responding to it. 10% of Johnny Erickson Tata's life is paralysis. 90% of her life is how she responds to it. 10% of Lisa Beamer's life is the tragedy that happened on the 11th of September. 90% of it now rests with how she responds to it. And speaking of greatness, the man named Paul in the days of the New Testament could have sat for the portrait with that name. And if we were to study that portrait carefully, we would see quite clearly and sadly thick and nasty scars that were marks on his body. Depending on when the portrait would have been finished, some would still be red and swollen, and a few even bleeding. Paul writes of those scars and wounds in the last chapter of the letter he wrote to the Galatians. In an unguarded moment, he picks up the pen or takes it from the hand of his amanuensis, and he begins to write, according to verse 11. Chapter 6, verse 11 of Galatians is a very unusual verse. And he says to the reader, "You see with what large letters I am writing to you with my own hand." It means these are large scrawling or sprawling letters in Koine Greek, the language in which the New Testament was written. And whoever could read from the autographa, the original letter from the hand and the mind of Paul, would notice a change in handwriting at verse 11. Did you know that? In fact, they could see it with their own eyes. We haven't any copies of the autographs left today, that we only have copies of such. But were we able to read, as someday we will, perhaps in our days in heaven, when those autographs are brought before us for us to see, wouldn't that be exciting? And let Paul tell us, well, we will know by then. What's the matter with me? We won't be learning then. We'll know by then. But it's just such a great thought to think we'll be sitting alongside Paul and his colleagues, and we'll hear from his own hand, his own mouth, the words that he wrote with his hands. You see with what large letters I'm writing. Perhaps when he was blinded with pain from a migraine, maybe he had some form of eye disease and he couldn't see the smaller print, so he wrote larger. It may be that his hand had been crippled from some torture that he had endured up to that point. The stoning at Lystra had left his hand crippled and he couldn't write as he once did. But he was determined in the writing of this last part of the letter that his own emotion would move into the words on the page. Sometime I do that. I write all of my stuff by hand. I don't do it on electronic stuff. For obvious reasons, sometime in the passion of writing, I push the pen through the page. Maybe he did that here. He wrote with a lot of feeling, and the feelings were because of what he says in verse 17. "From now on, let no one cause trouble for me, for I bear on my body the brand marks of Jesus." I love this verse. I don't mean to make light of it, but I am convinced that Paul is a little bit impertinent, contemptuous, if you will, at this point. He says, in effect, "Don't mess with me. Back off. I'm writing, bearing in my body the marks, the brand marks." One of the paraphrases say, "I carry on my scarred body the marks of my owner, Jesus. Don't give me any more trouble. I've paid for the right to instruct. I bear in my body the stigmata," S-T-I-G-M-A-T-A. We get our word stigma from the Greek word. It's from the verb stizo, S-T-I-Z-O, that means to prick, to stick, to sting. Stigmata is plural, and it means the stings, the scars, the pricks, the marks, the brands. In first century time, slaves had the names of their owners burned onto their bodies. They were branded like cattle. In the first century, soldiers would often tattoo the name or number of their outfit as they served in the Roman army. In the first century, devotees of false gods would often have the names of their gods tattooed or branded or marked on their bodies. With Paul, the brand marks were for the sufferings of Christ. That's why he was stoned. That's why he was struck. That's why he was beaten with rods. And every one of them were reminders that he belonged to his owner, Jesus. J. Sidlow Baxter, in a book that's now out of print — the great books are out of print. All of my books are still in print. That should tell you, that should tell you something right there. But J. Sidlow Baxter writes, "What were the actual marks on Paul's body, which he here speaks of as brands? There can be no doubt about the answer. They were those scars and sears and maybe long continuing sores which had come upon him during his costly and heroic service for the sake of Christ." Every time I'm around a veteran POW, I want to stand a little straighter and I want to shake hands a little firmer. They bear in their bodies the marks of liberty. This was the Apostle Paul, crippled from the blows, broken in body, but never in spirit. In fact, rarely does he even call attention. These kind of comments are so unusual, you have to search for them in his letters. It is not about himself, it is about his Savior. And that's why he's so great. It isn't about the actions that were done against him or even that he performed. It's his response to those hardships that make him so great and cause us to admire him so much. Matter of fact, on three different occasions in the letter to the second letter to the Corinthians, please go back to chapter one of that. The apostle mentions some responses. And I think if we're going to study the life of a Paul and learn something from him and his times, I think one of the great things we can learn is how to respond like the apostle responded. The way he did is the way I want to respond. But that is not usually the way any of us respond. We see hardship as an interruption, and often as an unfair pressure brought upon us, not the apostle. Verse 8 of chapter 1, he tells us only enough of an incident to make us hunger for more of the details. He says, I don't want you to be unaware of our affliction. Look at that word. Thlipsis is the Greek word. It means to have pressure added to you. And it could mean pressure from people. It could mean pressure from a depression itself. It was a deep, deep, painful time. Our affliction which came to us in Asia. And the result is we were burdened excessively beyond our strength so that we despaired even of life. It was so severe that he wasn't sure he could go on. Matter of fact, he uses the definite article in verse 9, saying we had the sentence of death in ourselves. That's quite a pressure. We weren't sure we could go on beyond this. Maybe you've been there. I don't know that I've been there. I felt at the time I was there, but looking back, it wasn't the sentence of death. It seemed like it. But with him, it must have been like that. We had the sentence of death within ourselves so that, look at his response, we would not trust in ourselves. I want to give you three ways Paul responded, and I want you to write them down. They are wonderful responses to remember, and I don't mind saying it, to memorize. The first response is he allowed the affliction to teach him to trust only in God. He allowed the affliction to teach him to trust only in God, so that we would not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead, who delivered us from so great a peril of death and will deliver us. He on whom we have set our hope, he will yet deliver us. He has delivered us. He is delivering us. He will deliver us. And so we have fixed our hope on him. I think the apostle reached the stage where he realized that he wasn't capable of changing things. He wasn't competent enough to fix the problem and solve the mystery. His confidence was drained away and siphoned off so that he didn't have the kind of strength he needed to go on. And the only way he could look was up. And so he looked up. Lord, well, right now I am unable to go on. I'm not capable. I'm not competent. I'm not even confident in anything in myself to get me through or beyond this. And I trust you and you alone. And he strengthened himself in the Lord his God. You ever done that? Nothing around you gives you strength. Not even your closest friends can you rely on. Quite possibly. Your situation is bleak. Your future is uncertain. It may be threatened. And you find yourself at a loss. And the only way you can look is up. And that's what Paul does in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 10, trusting in God and God alone. God and God alone. Look at chapter 4. Same letter. Chapter 4, he returns again to his circumstances. Verse 7. We have this treasure in earthen vessels, meaning the treasure of the gospel. We carry it about in our own bodies so that the surpassing greatness of the power will be of God and not from ourselves. We haven't the kind of power we need to go on in life and to stay strong and to stay encouraged. As a matter of fact, let me tell you what life is really like. I won't go to the end of each of these phrases. I'll go just to the beginning. Verse 8, we are afflicted. The next word to see is perplexed. The Greek word means without a way. It's a word used for being lost. Look at verse 9. Persecuted, you know what that means. On top of everything else, we are struck down. That's life in the real lane of the first century. That's the thanks Paul gets for living the life he's been living. We are afflicted, perplexed, persecuted, and knocked down.
Most of us can identify with Paul's condition. Like him, we're sometimes afflicted, perplexed, persecuted, and knocked down. Chuck Swindoll has a lot more to say on this topic. In fact, he's written a book to help you develop thick skin when times are hard. Earlier in today's message, you heard Chuck reference his long-held conviction that life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we react to it. Well, that's the title of his new book, and it's our featured resource right now at Insight for Living. This book will teach you how to find joy no matter what life is throwing at you. Plus, we've created a 90-day reflective journal so you can put your biblical mindset into practice. Reading a book is a great start. But there's nothing quite like sitting down with a pen and a journal to record what you might be hearing God say to you. It's an exclusive publication of Insight for Living and one that you'll treasure for years to come. It's called Cultivating Joy in Life's Circumstances. To purchase the Attitudes Bundle, including both Chuck's book and the Reflective Journal, just give us a call at 800-772-8888 or go to insight.org/offer. Insight for Living was introduced to the radio in 1979, and now, using every technology available to spread the word, Chuck's Bible teaching is accessed by men and women all around the world. But none of this occurs without the generous support of friends like you. Here's Chuck.
Down through the years, Insight for Living Ministries has touched the lives of millions of people. Thanks to folks like you. Those who invest in what we do make it possible for us to continue doing what we have attempted to do over the years. We're at a great turning point in our history.
now that we have come to this era where people are listening more than ever, looking for hope, a reason to go on, a way to get beyond the drag of yesterday and to move on into the hope of tomorrow and what it can mean for their future. Insight for Living will play a major role in that as we take the Word of God, open it, and allow them to read over our shoulder and to see how true these principles and precepts are. In order for that to happen, we need your support, your giving. Your faithful support will make it possible for us to continue what we have been doing down through the years. Thank you in advance for giving so generously.
We couldn't expect to make an impact in our country and the world without voluntary donations from grateful listeners like you. To send a contribution in the mail, address your envelope to Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas 75034. That's Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas 75034. To speak with one of our friendly ministry reps, call us at 800-772-8888 or give online at insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer. Join us when Chuck Swindoll continues his biographical study of Paul, a man of grace and grit, Friday on Insight for Living. The preceding message, Responding as Paul Responded, was copyrighted in 2001, 2003, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Incorporated. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.